Draft podcast. We are pivoting a little bit. We were going to do our running backs 5 through or 6 through 10 plus. There's more guys that we want to talk about as well. But Dane Brugler dropped top 100, and we're going to talk about it today. I think when it comes to NFL draft. Knicks, draft folks, draft media, whatever you want to call them. I don't think there is a more respected name in the industry than Dane Brugler. There certainly is not a more comprehensive draft guide that you are going to get than what Dane does in the Beast. And I think for me and Corey personally, Dane is one of the biggest inspirations that both of us have in the industry. If not the absolute biggest. He's practically the reason why I got started doing this back in 2016. So that's where I am at with Dane. That does not mean that I always agree with Dane, and we are going to talk about our disagreements here today, as long as the things that we'd loved to see from his top 100. But I cannot do this alone. Corey is here with me. Corey, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I had a nice little happy hour with some coworkers today, so I'm feeling pretty good to record this podcast.
Nice.
So, yeah, I got a couple drinks in and in my cut, so you know I had a couple Michelob Ultras to still stay within my
95 calories, baby. 95 yep. Calories. Well, you ready to get into it? We're just gonna do three likes, what we love to see, more like to see, and we're gonna do three dislikes. And I think for me personally, the dislikes are far more egregious than the likes here. Yeah. Going through this, outside of like the quarterbacks, because I think Dane is just potentially overvaluing the quarterbacks in this class in general, because I don't think Corey or I will have more than three or four guys in our top 100 at all at quarterback. And so that's a disagreement that we have with Dane. But let's start this off. We'll go like to dislike, like to dislike, like to dislike, back and forth. Let's do it.
Yeah, so the first guy that I agree with is a Shrine Bowl guy. I got to see him up close and personal, and again, I thought was the best player at the Shrine Bowl. But a player that I got validation from at the Shrine Bowl as well, because he's a player that I came in high on. Higher on than some defensive tackles that he's got in his 20s on his big board, to be completely honest. And I know that I'm probably an outlier in that. And we'll talk a little bit about one of those defensive tackles a little bit later on Dalton's list. But that's Maryland's defensive tackle, Jordan Phillips. So I don't think there's a better run defender in this class than Jordan Phillips. I think his lower half is completely rocked up and he's hard to move up the spot. Dane has him at 73 on his big board. I have a third round grade on him as well. So Dane and I kind of see eye to eye right there as well. I have a potential top 75 grade on Jordan Phillips. So I love to see that love. Again, I think he's got some work to do as a pass rusher. But again, he's 20 years old, explosive as hell, strong as hell. So I think there's a really solid foundation to build from because you can put him on the field and he's not going to be a liability in the run game. So That's my first one that I really love is at 73 right there with Jordan Phillips.
Yeah, we'll when we get to defensive tackles, we'll get in on a deeper discussion about Jordan Phillips overall. But everything you said, especially the lower half, the build, that dude has all the potential in the world at just 20 years old. My first like is Armand Membau, who Dane has at number 8. I have him at number 15. I have been singing his praises since God, what was the first big time matchup he had? Was it Texas A&M or was it South Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, you've been talking about this since probably October, November.
Yeah, I loved him immediately. I kind of looked him up after seeing, I was going in and watching Nick Scorton and Shamar Stewart, saw the duo at Missouri, really. But he's the one that stood out the most, and I looked him up. He ended up being on Feldman's freak list. I was like, this is a guy that I have to pay attention to, because he's not giving up pressures against some of the best pass rushers in college football. And then he did that for the rest of the year. So for me, OT1 is not off the table in this class. Really good athlete, right tackle, has the athleticism to play left tackle, but for me, there's no reason to really experiment. Left tackle, right tackle, it doesn't really matter at the NFL level. The blind side isn't that important at this point, because you don't have guys like your premier pass rushers aren't coming off of just the blind side anymore. A lot of the best in the game actually come off of the left side of the defense for the most part. So Membau for me is an absolute home run for Dane at number 8. I'm surprised to see him that high, but I'm very happy to see him getting the love he deserves.
Yeah, for sure. I have Membau at 24 on my board. So I'm a little bit lower than both of you on him, but it's still, I think I'm going to mock him in every single first round that I'm in, and he's going to be one of the first tackles off the board. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm lower consensus big board wise, I definitely do believe that I still have Josh Simmons as OT1. But I do believe,
I don't think that's unfair.
Is up there for sure. First one that I really disagree with is Oregon edge Jordan Burch sitting at 51 on Dane's board. Get the production this year at Oregon. And I know he went through that stretch where he was hurt as well, and he didn't play in the first Ohio State matchup. But for me, man, like Jordan Burch is really stiff. Really stiff. And I know that he's got similar measurables to some guys that go really early in the draft. And I know that he's going to test off the charts. He's going to put up some numbers. But at the end of the day, man, I can't get on board with stiff edge rushers. And I think Jordan Burch is one of those guys that I'm not going to be able to get on board. So 51 is very, very rich for me. Oregon edge rusher Jordan Burch there.
Yeah, makes total sense to me. He's not ranked for me. He is ranked for me, but he's not ranked in my top 100. And for everybody wondering out there, so far I have 120 finalized grades. So that's where we're at with Jordan Burch personally. Yeah. My first disagreement, I'm just going to go with the big one here. It's Jalen Walker, number 3 on Dane's board. And listen, I've known Dane has been on Jalen Walker all year, and he has been adamant that he is a pass rusher all year long. I get that. That's where I ended up grading him. That's where he graded higher for me. But it's still entirely a projection, because we don't see much of a pass rush plan for him. Mm-hmm. And I don't care. At the end of the day, I do not care how athletic you are. Some of the most athletic, bendy pass rushers I have ever seen have absolutely flopped at the NFL level, mm-hmm. because they don't have a good pass rush plan. You're not going to beat the 0.01% of athletes in the world by being a little bit better of an athlete. You have to be a technician as well. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll get there. Everything that we have heard about him not off of the field, but like in preparation for football, is right where it needs to be to become that guy. Mm-hmm. But there is a significant difference watching Abdul Carter play football and then watching Jalen Walker coming off of the edge. Both played linebacker. Both part-time edge rushers until this year with Abdul Carter. So, like, it's a similar thing between the two. But there is a significant difference between the development of one player to the next. And to have them at 2 and 3 feels weird for me. He's 22 on my board, so it's not absolutely egregious. He should still be a first-round pick. He still has a ton of potential. But for me, I can't bet that high on just pure projection.
Yeah, we've had the Walker conversation on Adapter Draft. He's 25th on my board, so I'm in the same consensus. And, you know, I talked to some guys at Shrine, and It's kind of all over the board too, right? I talked with Mike Renner, and who loves him. I talked with Trevor Sikkema, who's on the same page as I am, as we are on Jalen Walker. So just kind of all over the board with Jalen Walker there. But I agree with you that three is pretty rich. And again, I think Jalen Walker is closer to the 20s, 30s than he is the 10s. So the next one that I really agree with is another Shrine Bowl guy. But a corner that I thought has kind of flown under the radar all season, I think it's probably because he's 171 pounds and a little on the slender side, and people tend to shy away from that. I think
that's fair.
But he's got an unbelievable trigger. I think his ball production is off the charts. He's a four-year starter at Kansas. And this is Kobe Bryant, who is 96th on Dane's board. So crack Dane's top 100. I know some scouts that have second-round grades on Kobe Bryant as well, which is probably right around where I'll have probably a top 64 grade on Kobe. Just because, again, I will go all in on a corner that has a quick trigger and will hit. I think it's up and down his ability to tackle, willingness to tackle as well is kind of up and down. But I do think it's there.
It was there. It was there with the 166 pounder that just went in the first round and can't get the field anymore.
Yeah.
Like that's my issue with these guys is like, at some point there's just that requisite physical ability to get the job done and play physical enough. And I do think that there's exceptions to the rule. Like Devontae Smith on the offensive side of the ball is an exception to the rule, but defensively it's just so tough because I've fallen in love with guys with sweet feet and quick triggers too. And I love Kobe Bryant's game too. And I'm going to be high on Kobe Bryant too. And I like him being in Dane's top 100 as well. But at some point it's like, where is that cutoff of where a guy can simply survive the physicality at the NFL level?
And that's a fair point. I think one of the main differences between Emmanuel Forbes and Kobe Bryant is not only 5 pounds, which isn't a lot, I'm going to give you that, but is that Forbes, those Mississippi State defenses played a lot of off three. Mm-hmm. So Forbes is sitting off and he's hinged open and he's backpedaling, where Kansas is asking Kobe to get up and play a lot of best man and play a lot of shadow off the line of scrimmage. And I think he does an exceptional job of leading with his feet before punching as well, which is what I hate corners who just get up at the line of scrimmage and just want to punch. I absolutely hate it. Joey Porter Jr. didn't love Joey Porter Jr. And we've kind of seen this year he kind of fell back out a little bit from what he was doing his rookie season. The NFL lets guys get away with a little bit more, so maybe I should readjust because they do let them just come up and punch a lot at the NFL level. But and so that's what I think, like, the main difference in why I like Kobe so much is his body of work at the line of scrimmage in press man, leading with his feet, is exceptional. So him sitting at 96, I'll probably be a little bit richer than that, but I think a day two grade on Kobe Bryant is right where he should be.
Yeah, somebody who kind of picked up steam late in the college football season, somebody who I believe Corey talked about, who he believes is the best run defender in the class. We will have a heavyweight bout about this conversation later at a later date. Alfred Collins is the best run defender I've ever seen. period, in my opinion. And I have him too high, like it just flat out my grading scale wasn't able to properly value or devalue what he doesn't do well enough, which is bring absolutely nothing as a pass rusher, which he does not do. He brings nothing as a pass rusher, but he is 18th on my board because he is that good of a run defender, because he is that good of a trigger, because he is displacing SEC offensive linemen consistently yards away from where they started blocking him. The 36-inch arm, like everything is there for him, and the hands are there for him to disengage. It doesn't make sense that he sucks so much as a pass rusher. And like, there's no getting around the fact that he is an awful pass rusher, because you look at Devondre Sweat, you look at what Murphy did for them. There's production to be had there at that position. And he just didn't do it. It's not like they don't ask their guys to get after it. He just can't. But he's that good of a run defender for me that I have him that high. And I'm just very happy that Dane has him as a top 50 guy, because I think if it weren't for my grading scale and my numerical value, like, that's probably where I would value him, because he doesn't bring you anything in the passing game. But I think he's a guy that's going to play 10 years as a starter at one tech because of what he does against the run.
Yeah. I think at some point, rounds need to go out the window. If you draft a guy who's going to play for you for 10 years, like, that's well worth a first round pick, no matter if he doesn't bring any pass rush upside.
I mean, if you can tell a team
this guy will play for you for 10 years, like, they'll take him in the first round. Just there's so much nuance in the NFL draft. There's so much uncertainty. Like, if you can get that high floor,
and it's never that certain, you know.
That's not saying I would take Alfred Collins in the first round.
But
like, if a team's foreshadowed and looked at every single player in this career and at his draft and had that ability to look in a glass ball and see, I do agree with you that Alfred Collins probably has some of the best longevity of this class. All right. Second one I'm not too high on, and this is another Oregon guy. I sound like an Oregon hater on this podcast, and that's not my intention, but we just dug into this running back class. And you're higher on him than I do. I am probably 14 or 15 running backs deep, and I've watched one worse running back than Oregon's Jordan James. And Dane has him 62nd on his board. I have a 6th round grade on Jordan James. So that's a pretty wide chasm on a player right there. And so I can't not bring it up. I do think he has some short area quickness. I don't see a lot of long speed with a lot of these guys in this class as a whole, but I don't see much juice in the open field there at all. With Jordan James, I think his eyes are pretty spotty as well. And so I just have a hard time justifying how does this guy see the field at the NFL level, because also I don't think he pass protects very well at all. And then he's not a massive weapon in the passing game either. So like, what's the upside to getting this guy on the field on third downs or in passing situations? And I don't think there is any, which automatically really tanks a guy's value in my opinion. But again, really that, I mean, at best, I think he's a mid 4.5 athlete. To me, he, and then the contact balance is another thing. I don't think he plays with much contact balance at all. So again, we can talk about running backs later, but that's a pretty wide chasm from what Dane sees in Jordan James out of Oregon and what I see there.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked a lot about how I like Jordan James as a runner. It's pretty high. Dane has him pretty high. My second disagreement is probably the one that you guys listening are all going to hate the most, because everybody seems to love Ole Miss defensive tackle Walter Nolan. Love. I mean, we're talking first round mock draft. In like every single mock, he is going in the first round. And I just don't see it. Do I see the length? Do I see the explosiveness? Yes. There are times where he plays with his pants on fire, and I love that. But my God, his eyes are terrible. And at the NFL level, at defensive tackle, I don't care how hard you play. If your eyes are slow, you're going to get your ass kicked, and you're going to have games where you entirely disappear. And if you watch enough Walter Nolan,
he has college games
where you don't just watch the South Carolina game and the Florida game. There is a big chunk of his college football season where he just does not exist defensively for them. He's on the field for them, but he's not making an impact. And so this is what happens when we get into NFL draft evaluation. And we watch 3 games of a guy, and it's like, oh, he had 2 sacks in this game. Let me see how he got those 2 sacks. Oh, he had 3 sacks in this game. And then he had 7 pressures in that game. And we don't go back and watch the 2 or 3 games, not even 2 or 3 games, 7, 8 games where he had 0 or 1 pressures. And this is a 3 technique defense, like under tackle type, gap penetrating guy who did not consistently produce pressures in college football and was a liability against the run.
A massive one.
And so, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it shows up at the Senior Bowl too. Like his Senior Bowl highlights are all over the place in one-on-ones because those are drills where he's designed to win. If you turn on the duo drills, which nobody's clipping duo drills and posting them on social medias, he's getting blown off the ball.
Not on the Patreon, though.
There you go. But he's getting blown off the ball in those duo drills and in teams. And it's a constant theme on his tape, too, is he is not a good run defender.
Now, and it comes down to something we'll talk about with Jordan Phillips eventually. But it's something that happened with Mozzie. Like, laid off the ball. You are unsure of what's going on in front of you, and it doesn't matter how athletic or explosive you are, you're going to get your ass kicked by NFL offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. And Mozzie Smith got his ass, and Mozzie Smith is bigger, stronger, as explosive, and he got his ass kicked at 330 pounds. Mm-hmm. He didn't play 330 as a rookie, but he was neither here nor there. If your eyes are slow, you're going to get your ass kicked. And that's what happens far too often with Walter Nolan. And I just can't, I can't put him in the first round. He is, to me, he's my 57th ranked player. And I think the back end of round two is perfect for a guy who you project could be a difference maker as a pass rusher, but it's probably going to be inconsistent for the first 2 or 3 years of his NFL career.
We're on the same page, and it's
very much Ed Oliver, because yes. How long did it take for Ed Oliver to get it?
Yeah. I don't really enjoy bringing like stuff like this up on the pod as well, but he is also a player that scouts have questions about otherwise.
Okay.
To know as well. The third player that I'm pretty stoked about. Did you do your second one?
Yeah.
The third player that I'm stoked about Dane's placement is Matthew Golden at 27 on this big board. That's more bullish than I am, and I love Matthew Golden as well. I have Matthew Golden at 32 on my board. Dane has him at 27, so that's pretty much the same tier. So we kind of see it. I have a low second round grade. If Matthew Golden went in the first round, I would love it. Again, you don't have 32 first round grades on guys every year, so guys with second round grades routinely going to go in the first round. If that happened, I wouldn't blame anybody. The dude just understands the game of football and all of the little things and how to get open and how to manipulate the defensive back's hips and how to flash his hands late. And I could go on and on and on about all of these small things that it takes to win at the NFL level at the wide receiver position. He's not the most explosive. He's not the most twitchy. But he does every little thing that you could want a wide receiver to do well. So I love the Matthew Golden love as of late. Not from just Dane, but it's really come up. And I've really enjoyed watching that happen.
Yeah, with Golden, it's a lot of the little nuances that make Puka Nacua so good are the nuances that make Matthew Golden so good. Mm-hmm. Like on top of like not being, because both neither of those guys are outrageous athletes from an NFL perspective, mm-hmm. but they're both ball winners. They both have fantastic body control in the air. Both of them are very manipulative as route runners. And so I get the love as well with him.
And he's not a big dude, but dude, his catch radius is like every inch of his body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
My third like is Oluwafemi Oladejo from UCLA, former linebacker turned edge rusher this year. He's got great size. He's got great bend. Love seeing him in Dane's top 100. I do not have a full evaluation on him. Watched him for the first time at the Senior Bowl. I've been watching running back tape since, so I haven't gotten to fully scout him. But my gosh, he looked like a ton of fun at the Senior Bowl. And it's the exact type of guy where in that round three range, you take a shot on that type of athlete on the edge, because he could end up being such a difference maker for you if he is able to develop his hands, develop his pass rush plan. And like we've talked about ad nauseum, the NFL and private positional coaches are doing such a fantastic job with these athletic edge rushers to extract as much technical prowess out of them as they can. So for me, Olu is a really fun player that I'm excited to get my eyes more on.
Me too. Many are, nobody's saying this. Many are saying that he has Dollar Tree Abdul Carter. Nobody's saying that. But converted linebacker, hella twitchy, hella explosive, hella bad.
He kind of reminds me of Ajabo a little bit. And, loved Ajabo. Yeah. I loved, who was the Lions? Romeo Okorah. I know it didn't work out with Romeo, but those are the type of guys I love watching.
Love it. Yeah, I will take a raw but explosive and bendy pass rusher all day. Because you can teach hands. You can teach hands. You can teach pass rush plan preparation. You cannot teach bend and explosiveness. So, yeah. So my third guy that I think Dane is a little off on compared to my board is Purdue's Marcus Bowe. And again, I've been a Marcus Bowe advocate since May of 2024. So it's not too surprising that I'm high on him, but I know you're high on him too. Right now he's 33rd on my board. As a guard or center, like as an interior offensive lineman. So I have him higher grade 33rd as a center, but his guard grade would be negligible compared to that as well. I thought it was extremely interesting that they almost had him plan exclusively tackle the Senior Bowl, because everybody's projecting him as a guard and as a center. And that's usually the event where you would like to see a guy play at maybe what his natural position would be at the NFL level. And they just didn't, except for a handful of reps. So I feel like that was maybe a missed opportunity on the NFL's part because like those coaching staffs take after what scouts and what their teams want to see them do with those players. Maybe that's an indictment of, or not an indictment, but an indication that maybe teams wanted to play tackle, but I can't think that's accurate at 6'4", 333 inch arms, the 6'3", 333 inch arms, but he's athletic enough to do it. And he's done it for 2 years at Purdue, but I think this guy is going to be an interior offensive lineman at the next level and one that's going to see a second contract and play very well and start from day one. So I think 66 is probably too low for Marcus Bowe.
Yeah, he's a center. He's a center. A center. My biggest disagreement, not just with the ranking difference between me and Dane, but the reasoning is why I am very much in a massive disagreement about Nick Skorton. Mm-hmm. Should Nick Skorton have played at 280 pounds at Texas A&M? No. But look at that defensive line. Was anybody under 280 except for number 18? I forget his name.
The Bowling Green transfer?
Yes. He's kind of fun too. He is. He hasn't had enough time to get to 280.
Cassius Howell. Yeah, Howell.
Not enough time to get up to 280. Yeah,
Elko, I don't think he has the frame for it either. Yeah,
Elko will get him there by the end of the, by next year. Skorton, if he comes in, he came in lighter at the Senior Bowl. If he's at about 265, I think that's the perfect playing weight for him. Fix his body a little bit, but the biggest issue that I have with what Dane said was talking about the game plan, the pass rush plan, the hands, which I think are the best part of his game. Mm-hmm. As one of the youngest guys in this class, I think his hands are outstanding. I think the bend at his size is outstanding. I think playing at 280 was too much and it hurt his explosiveness. Mm-hmm. But this is a dude who at Purdue produced as a 19-year-old. This is a dude who has a high motor, who has the natural physical ability to be a fantastic edge defender as a run defender as well. He's got the motor for it to boot. He's got the fluidity to be a reactive athlete and to chase down plays on the edge at 265. And then he's got fantastic hands. He's got an outrageous inside spin move. He plays well with his defensive tackles in D-line games. I don't understand how he fell so far out of favor after being so highly regarded over the summer. And I know the production wasn't there at Texas A&M this year. I know he played heavier. I know his body was kind of not great. But this dude's hands are still there. this dude's bend is still there. And I think he is going to end up being one of the most consistently good players at the NFL level from this class. He may not ever be like a 15 sack guy. He might be more of a Tank Lawrence type where he gets 50, 60, 70 pressures, 8 to 12 sacks maybe. But he is going to be a consistent player for a long time at the NFL level, in my opinion. And he's still got a long ways to go to reach his full potential.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely am not as bullish, but I'm definitely not as low as that. I have him 26th on my board. Mm-hmm. That's still worthy of going the first round pick again. I think we might, if he shows up to Indianapolis in 2 weeks at 255 and he puts on a show, we're going to be talking about Nick Skorton again.
Yeah. I think 255 would be a lot to lose.
Well, he was 260 in Mobile.
Was he 260? I think 260. I think 260 is where he needs to be.
Well, then if he shows up at 260 and does what we think Skorton's capable of doing athletically, we might see a lot of big time draft analysts saying, well, let's go back and look at the 2023 tape.
Yeah. Yep.
Where he's playing at, not 280, not all team, all bad body team. So, Yeah.
That's it. Overall, thought Dane's top 100 was pretty good overall. There's a lot of, there's a lot of spread in this class.
Yeah.
The consensus big board is going to be awesome this year, but going through each individual board is going to give you whiplash, which makes this class a ton of fun overall, even though we don't think it's the most talented class. It is, in my opinion, the most fun I've had evaluating a class in quite a long time. And that's what it's all about, guys. That's all I got.
That's all I've got. So we're going to do a mock draft. Mm-hmm. And the week with the mock draft here, we'll touch on just a quick running back recap at some point, maybe early next week, and then move on to another position. But that's it. We're going to wrap up the week with the mock draft. Until we do that, I'm Corey. That's Dalton. This has been another episode of the Daft Mock Draft Podcast.